It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me today, our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. And it's time to do some spring cleaning. So we're going to talk about spring cleaning, spring chores around the house. And of course, Bill will also answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Bill.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, yeah, you betcha.
Now, a lot of us do spring cleaning, but in addition to just getting the house clean and ready for the summer, there are some important things that we do that actually make the house a little healthier to live
in.
And so one of your big concerns is indoor air quality. As we're getting ready for the next season, what should we be thinking about?
Well, you know, I think some of the things that we kind of forget about is the vent to the dryer. You know, the dryers put out a lot of heat along with a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of the lint that escapes the lint trap and it gets stuck in the lines. And a lot of the way that the vents are run in homes we see, they'll run them through like a colder area, like sometimes a crawl space, sometimes in between floor joists, but there's a lot of air leakage. And so you've got this really nice warm air coming from the dryer, but then it goes through a cold spot. And then what's supposed to be maybe going out of the dryer, the smaller lint particles, is they reach that point of condensation between the warm and the cold, and then they really stick to that vent pipe. And then the dryer's not working anywhere near as good as it should. Plus, you know, there's a good chance when it's that far away, maybe you could possibly maybe have a fire. So it's something to really do every spring, at least, is to make sure that that dryer vent pipe is cleaned. It doesn't have any kinks in it. Try to put in a solid pipe, not what I know some of the dryers kind of come with. I would call it basically a temporary a vent pipe, exhaust pipe, is that kind of a plastic corrugated that you can expand, you know, from like, say, 2 inches to seems like 10 feet. They don't move air very well, and they do not operate very well at keeping it clean either. So, you know, look at if it's something that's, you know, past your skill sets is have, you know, like say a plumber or a heating and cooling person come in and over, you know, look at that. And while you're down there, have them maybe change out the water lines to the washer and make sure they're the, like the stainless steel strengthened rather than just the ones that come with it, you know, to avoid any moisture problems down the basement. Because when you're down there, you know, you're going to notice all kinds of areas that maybe need to be cleaned. But when we come to indoor air quality, we look at, okay, if that dryer has had a really hard time pushing air out, that it'll push that moisture sometimes out of the fittings into those areas that are cool. So you could possibly have some moisture issues in the floor joists or in the crawl space. And if there's no air movement, then we start looking at mold issues. And a lot of people think that the mold issues are strictly from, like, say, wet, you know, strictly wet basements or leaking. But when we get even dryers pushing that warm air into those cold areas that happened over winter, then we might have some indoor air quality issues. And the reason I'm bringing that up is a lot of times your heating systems, you know, whether, you know, like with your, let's say your furnace is down there, there's a supply and a return. The return brings the air from inside the house back to be reheated and distributed or recooled during the summer and distributed throughout the house. Well, if you have a cold air return close to these areas that are moist, well, then you can start introducing, you know, either dirty air or high levels of moist air into the ductwork, and then you start getting any dust in there as well and getting clogged. And that's kind of a thing. There are, you know, companies that will do duct cleaning. I mean, you really have to do your research on these because some do a really good job and some don't. Get a lot of references. But that's an area we want the heating and cooling system to really operate well, because we tend to run our fans in the summer a lot of times. We run them more, you know, to just for air movement. Mm-hmm. And so if we're running them through dirty ductwork, or if we're running them through and pulling really heavy moist air through, you know, it could cause some issues, especially if someone is you know, respiratory issues or weakened respiratory systems. You know, they tie a lot of this back to, you know, triggers asthma, things like that. But, you know, those are areas we just never seem to think when we cleaning, you know, the gutters and all that simple stuff. But the ductwork and the pipework and things like that are very important.
So some people think about this, of course, in the fall when they're heading into the heating season. Do you think spring is a time of year that it makes more sense, or as long as you're hitting it once a year and thinking about it once a year?
You know, I kind of, me personally, I kind of rather do it in the spring because of that that difference of heat and cold, and we've gone through pushing warm air through maybe a cold area. Every house is different. But when you push warm air across the cold surface, you get condensation. And so then things stick to it. And that's, you know, one way we can usually tell if somebody has maybe some minor indoor air quality issues is they call it ghosting, is when you can look up on your top of your outside walls, your exterior walls, and where the ceiling meets the wall, you may see some darkening. Where each ceiling joist or the bottom of the rafter, it was cold during the winter, and then you had warm moisture inside the house, and all the particulate matter, the dirt and the dust, it goes up and it sticks to these spots because there's just enough condensation on the inside to catch it. And so it was usually, you'd see it in magazines, they'd blame candles and soot and all that. But there's enough just regular particles coming, you know, from people with skin cells and dust and dirt and everything. Sticking to those is, you know, we need to clean our air a little bit better than what we think. You know, I always liked when I was young, I can still remember younger, when somebody would be running a vacuum cleaner, you know, and the sun would be coming in a big window and they're running the vacuum cleaner and all you see is this stuff.
The dust beams.
Oh my
right?
gosh. And then you're thinking, you know, maybe I should just be breathing through my nose all the time. I don't know if I want to breathe through my mouth anymore and take all that in. But, you know, we need to, if we have a tendency maybe not to not ventilate enough as well. So, you know, if you're going to be, thinking about cleaning your air a little bit better or changing the air more often, you know, maybe upgrade your bathroom vent fans. You don't have to go with, you know, the best. I mean, I'm a big proponent of, you know, ventilation systems, heat recovery ventilation systems, so you don't lose energy and they're bringing in, you know, so much cubic feet and all this. But, you know, just putting in a really good, very high efficiency, quiet bathroom vent fan can a lot of times take care of the majority of your issues.
Now, we always think about opening up the house and
right.
airing it out
right.
in the springtime. We also need to make sure those screens are clean too, right?
Well, we do, and not only clean, but I mean, in decent shape, because it's, you know, it's amazing how often you'll drop something against it, or an animal will get up against it and maybe put a little tear in the screen, you know, things like that. We may have to get them repaired or replaced, and this may be the time to where, you know, we've gotten our tax returns. Maybe we ought to invest in some good storm, you know, energy efficient storm windows that you can open and close with good screens.
All right.
That's right. And, you know, and I usually, we don't open our windows very much at all because, you know, we live by a gravel road and it's, the house stays cleaner if I don't open the windows. So that leads back to, well, you still need ventilation. It has to go through filters to keep the air clean. So it's kind of a catch-22, you know, and I've always been, I don't really like the smell of chemicals in the spring. And if you're smelling it, well, then that means, you know, it's probably not good. It's probably not good for you. And I really don't like to have that in the house either.
Now, what are some of the other things that you do every spring, or at least that you should do?
Yeah, not what I. Oh
right.
gosh, no. Yeah,
you're not our number one role model, though.
Oh no, I'm not.
But what are some of the important things that we should be doing in the spring?
Well, you know, of course, you know, you hear it all the time. You make sure your batteries are up to date on your fire extinguishers, or I mean, your smoke detectors and your carbon monoxide detectors, but. You know, we were talking earlier the importance of fire extinguishers and having the, you know, like a multi-purpose one that, you know, you can have for grease fires and how to operate it. I mean, it's amazing what you can – if you actually watch YouTube or have like the fire department, you go to their – you know, to their maybe grand opening sometimes or fire days. They show you how to properly operate a fire extinguisher and how often we do them wrong. But, you know, to have one handy, like I carry one in the door of my truck. I mean, it fits. The one I bought fits perfectly where a cup holder is on the door. So when I open the door, there it is. So if you're at the scene of an accident or something, you go grab it. Well, there it is right out in front. You don't have to dig through the toolbox or something. Or in a kitchen, you know, I know they don't look the best, and maybe somebody's got a good idea on how to make it look pretty sharp so you can actually have it on the counter where you need it instead of have to shove your garbage and all the plastic bags you save, you know, from Fairway, you know, that you pack stuff in to dig all the way back cabinet and get your fire extinguisher. They should be handy, and we should have them, you know, in the kitchen. We should have them in the basement. We should have one, your vehicle, in the garage. It's surprising how many garages don't have a fire extinguisher, and that's where we should be keeping, you know, our gasoline. If we, you know, like for mowers and that, is have it at, you know, a garage, or the better is in a shed out back. But you should have a fire extinguisher any place where you think there might be the chance of fire, or if you're out burning. You know, we were out burning yesterday, burning brush and some things up in northern Iowa, and luckily where we were at, there wasn't a whole lot of wind. We were in a valley, but it's pretty easy for a small fire to take off, and you know, you should have one around.
All right. Now, how about, speaking of moisture?
Yeah.
How about with the spring rains coming? What should we be thinking about to keep our basements dry and make sure that at least we're in fighting shape for
yeah.
the spring rain?
Getting ready. Well, you want to make sure to get those extensions on your downspouts. Get those out of the garage or wherever you've put them because you got tired of mowing around them, or replace them if you have run over them and smashed them. Get some long ones. Get some that will take the water, you know, like 6 feet away. When you see downspouts come out and they kick out like 4 inches, all that's doing is putting all that water right down to your basement. You want to get it away from the house because let's say you have a fairly new home. When you build a house, they excavate for the basement, and they excavate usually at least 2 feet, you know, 3-4 feet away. That soil is going to take a long time to settle to where it's the same density, in fact, you know, decades as what the rest of the yard is. So it's going to constantly be sloping to the house. So if you haven't added more dirt to level it out or to make it so that it sheds water away from your foundation, at least get the extensions on your downspouts so it takes the water past that, we call it the overdig area. Get that past and it goes away. The sidewalks, now that, you know, the frost is out here, you'll notice maybe your sidewalks are sloping, your driveways are sloping towards your basement. If you're not going to replace them, then have someone come in, you know, like do mud jacking or foam jacking where they lift it up to shed the water away.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. And Bill, of course, is here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nevy. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here with us today, along with his new dog, George, also
yes.
here, ready to answer questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Tom is on the line in Algona. Hi, Tom. Hi, Tom. Yeah, what's your question?
How are you?
Good.
Well, I have a house where they had cut the overhangs off. I'm sure that they were rotten. And so before I bought it, some years before, they must have cut them off. And I was wondering if it was worth the time it would take to put them back on, since it did have water further away from the house.
Yes. Yeah, I really like overhangs, larger overhangs, as opposed to even having gutters. I like handling the water that way. I think especially they didn't take them off. Basically, like on the ends, the gable ends, it's not quite, you know, it's not near as important. But on your regular overhangs, yeah, at least 2 foot. There's a there's kind of a move to moving, you know, even 2 foot overhangs, you know, 24-inch overhangs, even out farther, because when that water is starting to come at, you know, any kind of a velocity, it tends to shoot out a little farther, and it, you know, it'll a lot of times clear that overdig area when from excavation. But oh yeah, I just go ahead and if it, you know, if possible, you know, you could still probably sister some, you know, some small 2x4s, you know, on the sides of the rafters that are up there, maybe. Sometimes I know what guys will have to do is they'll have to take off the bottom, you know, course of, you know, sheeting up 4 feet and redo it. But I personally believe it would be, you know, probably the smartest thing to do for that. Yeah, you bet.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot for your call.
Yeah,
now,
thanks.
If somebody has just cut off the overhangs, that's a lot more difficult than just repairing the overhangs,
it,
right?
It is. Well, you know, especially on a lower pitched roof, we didn't understand how water came down a roof. You know, we just put regular felt paper, even 15-pound, which was very thin, felt paper, and we a lot of times didn't do a good job of putting the drip flashing at the bottom. And on the lower slope, when water comes down, you know, even though you think, okay, it's going to fall off the edge, wind will drive it up, or through surface tension, you know, it'll hang there and it'll go up. And it's and a lot of the houses that we built in the 70s especially, the bottom 2 feet of sheeting is a lot of times rotten because of that moisture would hang in there and it didn't get a chance to dry. The water would get underneath your shingles and then rot the sheeting out. And for a lot of guys, if they said, hey, fix the roof, and they're looking at a budget, they may have just come along, pulled the shingles off, taken a chainsaw and cut that overhang off, slap a board on, be done. And it's sad. It wasn't the right thing to do. And at that time, they could have put, you know, extended some tails on there. You know, it's work, obviously. But the thing is, too, is when they probably cut that overhang off, if they put a solid piece of wood, they probably cut off their attic ventilation as well. So for Tom, it could be two things that's going on here: poor water distribution off the roof, and it cut off his ventilation to his attic. So he could, you know. This will probably help him that way as well.
All right, Tom, good luck with that. The number to call with your question, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Bill, I know this is also the time of year, if you're doing some spring cleaning, you can actually maybe take an inventory of your tools.
Right. Yeah, I've always been looking for that. My wife, Donna, she's just tired of hearing that. I've been looking for that. And, you know, when you do the inventory, it's a really good time to really clean things up. You know, even little things like crescent wrenches, you know, to adjust crescent wrenches, there's this little basically a dial. And most of the time when I grab my crescent wrenches, especially if down the shop, well, they don't turn. So it's almost like you got a regular wrench. But, you know, do some upkeep on those. And what I read the other day, and I can't remember what magazine it was. I don't know why I've never seen or heard it before. And probably a lot of guys have. But, you know, that street chalk that kids use for, you know, doing chalk drawings on sidewalks is take one in your toolbox, is put one in the top tray and one in the bottom, and it pulls the moisture in, kind of like those little silica bags.
Huh.
And that way the tools don't rust inside your toolbox. And in fact, just yesterday I got frustrated. My almost new Makita drill somehow got some moisture in it, and now I can't take my drill bit out of it. Just a little bit of rust got in there because I put it someplace where there was some high moisture level. But if you, especially now at the beginning of the season, get a really good inventory, get things stretched out, and you feel a lot better when you spend a little bit of money and maybe get the right boxes, and you know, or at least put things in these big, you know, totes to keep them dry, or you redo your pegboards. And this is the time because the sales are starting, the spring sales. And when Father's Day comes rolling around or Mother's Day comes rolling around, you catch those sales to maybe replenish some of your tools. And you know, a lot of times, you know, maybe really think about the quality. If you do use things a lot, don't go for this, you know, the cheap budget ones. You want something you can hand down as well.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Bob is on the line in Altoona at 866-780-9100. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'll just ask a question and then hang up and listen to your answer off the air. why don't you ever see lightning rods being put up anymore on new construction? And do you recommend lightning rods anymore? Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. You know, that's something that I really should refresh my base on, because I'm in the same boat. Of, you know, I think it's because we have such good grounding systems now in homes where you know, the new codes are your house has to be grounded to the re-rod that's in your concrete, and there's so many square feet of that concrete has to be in contact with soil, and really good grounding rods. I think it's mostly because in those older homes, we didn't have the grounding systems that we do now. An electrician would have a really good idea on that. I wish Dwight Kramer, State Fire Marshal, would be listening right now, the electrical guy, because he'd be able to tell you. But every seems like about every 10 or 15 years that comes up and people buy them again. But, I could be all wet, but I think it's just because we have such good grounding systems and good oversight by the electrical inspectors to handle that. When you do get a lightning strike, you don't see the place burn down. It travels through and through the grounding system.
All right.
Boy, that was the one. I wish that one wouldn't have come up because that was a toughie for me. I should have referred to George. He would have given me a better answer.
All right, let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Doug is on the line in Van Meter, South Dakota. Hi,
oh,
Doug.
Good.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I am calling. Well, first of all, I want to mention that if you're going to cut into an overhang, I would think it would be safer to use a sawzall instead of a chainsaw.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I wasn't saying. No, I was just saying that's probably what they did. No.
Right, and it was a bad idea.
That was a bad idea. But thanks for reinforcing that because I was hoping it didn't come out that way. Good job, Doug.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Uh-oh.
Oh, are you
did
still
we
there?
Lose him?
Oh, he may have dropped off. All right, Doug, give us a call back.
Yeah, because that was a good point.
Right, we'll take you as soon as you call back.
It's bad when an out-of-stater has to correct you.
All right. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hello, hello. Well, you know, it's springtime, and, we have a lot of wind. So in adding to your topic, I would just tell people, get that chainsaw tuned up and a nice sharp blade, maybe an extra one, some fancy oil to go with it,
Yep.
Have it ready.
You're right.
Yeah, we still have chainsaw work to do from last summer sitting and waiting for us. That's a good suggestion, Jim.
Yeah, and Jim, that's a good point, too, is because, one thing you do see is a lot of people buy chainsaw that is really too big for what they're doing. I've got a real nice, that's, I think it's a 28-inch, but very seldom do I use it because they're too bulky and they don't really cut that many big trees. But, really a good brand with like 16-inch bar. And like Jim said, have them sharp and have an extra one ready. And make sure that, one good thing that's really good for chainsaws is to have an air compressor around. And every time you get done using it, take that cover off to where you pull the chain and the bar off and take an air compressor and there's a little attachment where you can shoot compressed air and clean all that gunk and everything out and it'll last that much longer and make sure the little roller at the end of the bar moves very carefully. They have a little greaser that you can put in there to make sure that rolls and just a little bit of upkeep and they'll run forever. But, for most people, you really don't need anything larger than like a 16-inch, and that's usually plenty. I mean, I'm using it up in northern Minnesota, and I don't use the big one at all. I mean, how often would I need to cut a tree that was, 50 inches across? So, maybe do some YouTube videos possibly on how to, training. I remember one time when I was teaching Iowa Central, they had me teach a course on chainsaw safety, and I can remember all my buddies going, you're going to teach chainsaw safety? I said, yeah, I'm showing what not to do. That's my job.
All right, Jim, that's a great suggestion. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions and your suggestions for annual chores that we should be taking care of right now. And here's a question from Jay in Norwalk. How do I remove the dark stains that accumulate over time around doorknobs and cabinets without removing the finish on the wood?
On the doorknobs and the finishes, usually it's that oil cleaner. Can you help me, Charity?
Murphy's oil soap?
Murphy's oil, yeah.
Okay.
Try that because that seems to be what people use, and it's right because some of the cleaner, I usually just grab what's under the counter, and that's not the right thing because a lot of times it'll soften the finish.
Right.
Yeah, so a lot of times it's just elbow grease, and I know a lot of guys use the Armor All cleaner. It's pretty safe on a lot of different finishes, and I know that they use that one a lot. A lot of guys have that in their garages or whatever. But I think Murphy's would probably be the safest. But everybody has their little ingredients.
Of course, there are probably people that are trying to make their doors look dark around the doorknob for an antiquing look.
Oh, so you could that's patina is what they call that. Yeah, that gets you big bucks on Howe's if you ever want to sell it to somebody in New York.
Right. Well, our floor, we've got two dogs, so our floor is all scratched up. And I remember seeing somebody put in a new floor on a TV show, and then they take like a board with nails on it and scratch it up to antique it.
Distressed.
We could just rent our whole family out for a week and do that for you.
Yeah, put some food at the other end of the room and let them go.
Right, all right. Jim's on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Jim.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
I had an old shower in the basement, and the O-ring was not the best of shape, and it kept leaking and leaking, so I readjusted that little lever so that it wouldn't leak as much. Now, if I wanted to stop leaking, what do I have to take apart? Put a new O-ring in.
Is it a major brand? Do you know what brand it is?
It's been there since hell froze over.
That's Lucifer brand. Okay. I would take a picture of it. You know, if you've got a phone or iPad or something, take a picture of it and get some dimensions and then go to a plumber. Or some of the big box stores have some pretty well trained people, but a plumber would be able to help you on that. I know some will try to just go ahead and sell you a new faucet, and that may be your best bet. It depends on usually when I've taken an O-ring out, it's the O-ring. It's not so much that, it's all the sediment, you know, because my water in that particular house wasn't that great, and so it kind of took it out. But I would take a picture of that and some dimensions, if at all possible. Like a lot of times you'd take a tape measure, real good close-up, you know, so they get a reference of size of what it is. I'd start with a plumber and go that route right from the beginning instead of trying to especially if it's no brand. Because is it probably just somebody one that soldered it and using the old, like, red and blue twist handles on it? Is it one of those older ones like that?
Well, it's not quite that old. Oh. But, stainless steel or chrome little handles on it. And since it's been leaking, the drywall has gotten rather mushy. What would you use?
Yeah, take that out. Get that drywall out as soon as you can, because there's going to be some mold growth in there.
What would you replace it with? Waterproof drywall?
Well, you know, they've kind of changed some of that, the different products on that. If you go to a supplier and you tell them the application, they'll have their particular brand, more of a fiberglass board, more of a cement-based board. You just want to completely stay away from anything that has any paper product in it at all. You know, we used to be able to buy, like, the green – we'd always just called it the green board. We considered it moisture-resistant. But they've kind of gotten away from that and gone to, like, a fiberglass-type board. But, you know, I would get that board out of there as soon as you can. But, you know, if you take a picture, like I say, a plumber's going to be able to help you the best and the fastest on that as well.
All right, Jim, thank
you
so much for your call. And Doug in South Dakota is back. Hi,
hey,
Doug.
Here we go.
Oh, I am sorry we got disconnected. My question was about an old garage where the roof is starting to sag. It needs to be replaced, and I need to also reinforce that the rafters. But I'm wondering what would be the best way to make sure that before I sister any 2x4s onto the rafters to make sure that I get them absolutely straight.
Well, you know what? What we've done in the past is it like a double car or single wide garage?
It's about 18x30.
Okay. What I've done in the past is gone about every 6 feet and along the double top plates, you know, that the rafters sit on, and put a cable and put a turnbuckle system in and pull the walls in, because a lot of times, you know, that's what happens is the garages, especially if they don't have a ceiling joist, they'll have like the collar ties. Does yours have like collar ties up a little higher? maybe a couple feet down from the peak on the inside of the rafters?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, it's just a board that goes from one rafter to the other that's supposed to keep them from spreading. But on long garages like that, if you get a turnbuckle system in there, and then you can, you know, a cable with a turnbuckle, and then gradually pull the walls in so they're straight, have a string line on each side of the garage, and then you can get those perfectly straight, and then you would go ahead and reinforce your rafters. The downside is if it's fairly old, when a rafter sags, well, now you've got an inverted arch, and you're really not going to be able to push that back up, so you're going to have to sister straight ones on the side after you have the walls pulled in. And if it's 18 feet wide, I'd buy some 18-foot 2x6s minimum and put those on top of the walls like every 4 feet or so to hold the walls in place.
All right, Doug, thanks a lot for your call. And we'll continue with Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got a couple lines open right now for your call. 866-780-9100. Susan is on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Susan.
Hi there. Bill, I spoke to you, I think it was last fall. I was on my way to the Twin Cities to purchase a house.
Okay.
Or, you know, to make an energy-efficient house, and you told me to talk to Pat Holman, and I did. He's a delightful man, very helpful.
Good.
Well, I did buy a house, and by the way, it has two-foot eaves. I'm happy to hear that's good. and it's one story with a finished basement for the most part. My question for you is this. I had an energy audit done, and it was suggested the house is pretty tight. It was built in 1949. It is brick. And the gentleman who did the energy audit suggested that I get rid of the whole house fan and replace it with a HRV system, ventilation system, heat recovery ventilation system. I have absolutely no problem with that.
Uh-huh.
However, my question pertains to the natural gas water heater. First of all, it's located a long ways away from the upstairs kitchen and bathroom and also the downstairs bathroom. And the auditor suggested, you know, once you have that HRV system put in, check to make sure that your current water heater is not backdrafting. And by the way, it's on its last leg. So he was saying, you know, if you get a new one, again, check for backdrafting due to the ventilation system upstairs. And if it does occur, add a power vent. And I was reading about power vents for natural gas water heaters, and it sounds like they use a lot of energy, a lot of electricity. So my question is, why not, given I'm going to be doing some remodeling, it's going to be messy anyway, just get rid of the current natural gas water heater, move it closer, get an electric one that I can, you know, add an insulation wrap to possibly, but move the location of it closer to the downstairs bathroom and the upstairs bathroom and kitchen so that the water, once you do have hot water, you know, you just don't let it sit in the lines after you're done using the hot water. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
The current natural gas water heater is so far removed from where the end use is. And I just thought, you know, if I get a new one and I have to add a power vent, that costs money. So why not just get a new electrical one and put it where the action is and be done with it, and I don't have to worry about backdrafting, period.
Yeah. I don't like any natural draft appliance. There's really no reason for them except they're cheaper in price up front. I've really never heard that the power vents, that's kind of caught me there. I've never heard that they chewed up that much electricity. But, you know, are you by yourself?
I read one article on this.
Oh, though. Okay.
That doesn't make me an expert.
That's why. That's why I will never call myself an expert. Are you by yourself? Do you live by yourself or?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you've got good water there, if you looked at the on-demand units for hot water, you could look.
No.
Yeah, you could. You know, a buddy of mine just told me he was just bragging about how good his is, and he's got three people living at home, kids. There's a lot of different brands. Renai makes one. There's a lot of different brands. I would maybe look into that.
And they're hugely popular in every other country other than the United States.
They are. And our problem usually is because a lot of our water isn't that great. And it gets a lot of sediment. And it's not the product. It's the water we're putting into it. You know, we don't take that good of care as other countries do. The heat recovery ventilator, there's a lot of different models now, especially for you, how big the house is.
3,000 square feet.
How large again? I'm sorry.
3,000 square feet. It's in St. Paul. I haven't moved there yet because we're going to be remodeling.
Okay.
So the house is roughly 3,000.
Yeah, they'll size you a heat recovery ventilator for that one. You know, I'm just guessing on it would be, you know, something that would move like 75 to 90 cubic feet per minute. But when they put those in, the one thing you want to ask them is make sure that they balance that. Because if it's balanced, that means there's the same amount going in as there is going out.
Okay.
And but I would either get, you know, like the on-demand hot water heater. If you buy an electric hot water heater, you want to check with the utility company there. Some utilities there's an incentive to have an electric one, and some don't because they may be more natural gas, you know, lean more towards natural gas. If that was the case, then go ahead and buy a power van. I've been involved with a lot of them, never seen a problem with them at all. But the electric ones, when you buy a good one, like and I'm just throwing in the brand out because that's what I'm used to, is Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're made by Rheem now, but every major brand has it. But the thing about those is they're so efficient. A lot of people use them just as storage tanks because they have about 3 inches of foam. I mean, they're not the old water heater like we think. When that water gets heated up and it's in there, it only drops like maybe 1 or 2 degrees during a day. The other option is to leave it where it's at. Go ahead and get the power vent water heater. Leave it where it's at. And then you get to put a recirculating pump in there so the hot water is always there. And the plumber could do that. But the old whole house ventilation units, get rid of that thing, seal that hole up.
Okay.
Your auditor was right there because in today's world, we have the technology to give you good air without having a 3-foot by 3-foot hole in your attic. Right.
Got it. Yeah, and I have a 3-foot by 3-foot hole right now. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
And don't open it.
Thank you.
Yeah, please don't run it or open it because last time I did that, that's where the roofer put all the shingles was in the attic on top of that. So have somebody else do that one for you. Good.
Love it. Well, I've been in the attic. It's fun. It's very interesting to do these things. So,
yep.
Okay, thank you so much.
You betcha, Susan.
Really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Susan. Next up, we've got Larry in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hello, Larry.
Yes, good morning to you. I have been using chainsaws for a number of years and recently bought a new one. I'm curious about your recommendations on the type of gasoline in the gas and oil mixture. What are the pros and cons between premium versus regular and ethanol versus non-ethanol?
You know, the guy that I got my saw from, I've got a steel. I've always had really good luck with steel chainsaws.
That's exactly the brand name I have. Plus, they're killers.
Yeah. And what he told me is just go ahead and get the regular with no alcohol. And, you know, of course it's a 50-to-1 mix. And I always buy, you know, the steel brand, you know, 2-stroke oil to put in. It's probably, you know, silly that I am, but whenever I can, I just buy, you know, it's like the 8-pack of them. And I tell you, I've the I've never had a problem with that saw that wasn't caused by me. I mean, it as long as I keep good fresh gas in that thing, and I stay up on the bar oil and that. I mean, even the bars, the steel brand bars, I've got them pinched and they've held up really well. So I'm glad you did that. But yeah, he told me just don't waste with don't go with the premium. Just go with regular, no alcohol. This is what he told me to do. So.
Okay, thank you much for your answer.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Larry. Next up, we've got Virginia in Iowa City. Hi, Virginia.
Hi.
Hi.
So we have a backyard and a patio that slopes gently towards our house. And in the springtime when the snow melts and then sometimes when there's a heavy rain, we get a little bit of water that seeps in the basement of an unfinished portion of our basement.
Okay.
And it really freaks my mom out every time she sees it. She says, you got to get the whole thing regraded. And I don't really see it as a problem because we don't keep anything down there that would get wet.
Okay.
So
Bill looks like he's on your mom's side already. All right.
I'm with your mom.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, even though you can't see it, is it a concrete block basement, do you know?
Yep.
It is? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go into my scary mode. Okay. On a concrete block, they're hollow cores. So every 8 inches, you have an 8 foot tall by roughly 6 inch by 6 inch square petri dish that moisture is going to come in from outside and hide in that nice, cooler, warm, dark area and grow. And at the top, it may be able to come into the house. Let's say to the previous caller, is if you have a ventilation system or a dryer running that may cause some depressurization in the house, it may be pulling air through your concrete block into the house. I know Minnesota had issues with that back in the early 90s with things. That's why I call it a petri dish, because, in fact, I think it was Pat Hillman that told me that from a previous caller, that there was so much junk growing inside these concrete block, hollow concrete block, because of the moisture coming from outside. So I'd regrade that and try to get what's recommended is like 6 inches of slope in the first 10 feet and then shed it away so it goes around your house and doesn't get to the basement. Yeah, sorry, I am with your mom on this one.
Do we need to dig anything out or do anything to the basement that has been getting wet?
I just tried going in little steps, and this may be enough to handle it. It may be. Right. They may have done a really good job of waterproofing on your foundation. I always just kind of figure that, you know, I kind of look at the worst. But try to shed it away, and that may take care of it, and just a simple light regrading. And if they do regrade, please, please don't let anybody get close to your foundation, especially concrete block with heavy machinery. Even a skid loader, when you're running along concrete block, it's heavy enough for that soft soil that it may crack, and it's usually the second course down that seems to crack out. So just don't let them get any closer than like 4 or 5 feet away.
All right. Good luck, Virginia. Buy your mom some flowers. No, thanks a lot for your call. Beth is up next in Urbandale. Hi, Beth.
Hey, I just heard the conversation earlier that was the lady called in about her water heater being quite a ways away from where she needed, like with a master bedroom. And we've had that happen before. And I can't tell you the technical term, but you'll know what it is. My husband and a plumber put on a device that has a timer on it. And we set it for the morning when we're getting ready for work, and we set it for nighttime when we are getting ready for bed. And somehow, and it's connected to the water pipes that are leaving the water heater.
Yep.
And it sends hot water to us, so we're not having to waste water.
Yes.
You know, by 2 minutes of waiting for hot water to get there.
Exactly.
Do you approve of those?
Yes, that's a recirculating pump. A recirculating pump, what it does is just the way you said it. The good ones have that. You can, so it'll just recirculate the hot water. So when you turn that faucet on, that you have the hot water right now and you're not wasting it. So what it's just moving the hot water out of the hot water heater, and so it's in the line and ready to go, and you're not wasting it. And some of the newest ones are very, very efficient, and that's really. A lot of guys will put that in as a standard, even on new homes now, because of, you know, the houses, sometimes what we're using, the sinks and the you know, and the sinks and the showers are so far away that you know you can sit there and waste, I swear, you know, maybe it seems like a gallon of water. So you're right. Yeah, yeah, it's just called a recirculating pump.
Oh, thank you.
You bet.
Yeah,
thanks.
We love it.
Thanks.
Yeah. Bye.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Beth. And we've probably got time for one more caller. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from John in Iowa City, and I'm not sure you'll be able to answer this one or not, because it probably varies.
Ouch.
But how long are fire extinguishers effective? After 10 years, is the indicator, if the indicator is still green, is it trustworthy?
I think it is, but there again, I'm just going by when, if I see that gauge is still good, I assume it is still good. You know, that's something you'd want to, you know, maybe call the fire department and ask them. They're more than willing to help you out on something like that.
All right. And of
right.
course, you're afraid to test it out.
I would ask a fireman before I'd look on the internet. Seriously, I would. I'd ask a fireman.
That goes for so many things.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Can I move this shed down the highway? Well, it depends how fast you're going, I guess. You can move it. Who cares about the water lines? Or...
Right. So what projects are you working on this spring?
Well, this spring, actually cleaning up the backyard, digging out some stumps with a backhoe. I've gone through a whole bunch of recycled clay and dirt that had a lot of whole brick, old used brick in it. So I spent 4 days cleaning that so that the kids then can now, Dad, can I have some used brick for a patio? Yeah, just, you know, just doing a lot of outside cleaning because the weather's been so nice. At least I think it's nice. If it's 20 degrees to 40 degrees, it's perfect.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Gary's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Gary.
How are you doing today?
Good.
What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question. I just wanted to remind everybody that I work in the commercial laundry equipment business, and just remind everybody to check their louvers this time of year, because this is when the birds are looking for a real convenient spot to build their nest. And if you've got bad louvers on the outside of your house, pretty soon you'll have a problem with your dryer, because there'll be a bird's nest in there. We see them all the time.
Hey, great. I'm so glad you called. You know, there's the outside, you know, vent louver, that plastic one that goes up and down. That, you know, it's got the little plastic cap that comes down over the lid and is kind of protected. Do you like that one? Because you're the one that has to service this stuff. Or do you just like the plain louvers that, you know, that has a nice hardware cloth on the outside or something? Which ones do you think is best for people?
The best ones are just the plain, like the three little louvers that run horizontally. Those work the best.
Okay.
And the biggest problem we have is if they have some sort of a cage on the outside of there, those things collect lint so bad.
Great.
I mean, you can go about maybe a month or so, and somebody will call and say, my dryer's not heating. And you go over there, and then they tell you that their clothes are hot and wet, and that's because it can't vent properly. And usually 9 times out of 10, it's either that cage that's gotten all plugged up,
yep,
or there's a bird that's found a way to get inside your dryer vent. And, boy, they'll go 3, 4, 5 foot back inside of there. It always kind of breaks my heart when you pull them out and you find all those eggs in the nest. That's what you got to do. But, yeah, those are the best. Or actually, if you come straight out of the wall, put an elbow and an 8-inch drop, that's the best way to go.
Really?
No,
okay.
Restrictions. You never get a buildup, and the birds can't fly up that 8-inch drop. And it's got to be at least 8 inches. A foot is best if you can do it, but sometimes you're too close to the ground.
Well, thank you, because now you asked me earlier, Charity, what I'm going to be doing.
That's what you're doing now.
I'm going to go back. Thanks, Gary. Thanks
All
a lot.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot for your call. And Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, in the house today, and he'll be back again next month to answer your questions. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.